A wonderful good morning to you and welcome to another edition of the Midweek Drive in 2020. You don't want to stop reading during the scary bits because I'm sure it'll work out okay in the end. Isn't that right, Lauren Wood?
Yeah, of course.
Exactly. Positivity. Now, Lauren Wood, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. I used to be a regular Midweek driver about a year ago. We were in the joys of Newark for the 2019 Newark Book Festival, which obviously you are not only Volunteer of the Year, but one of the key fine folk who assists Sarah Bullimore in the awesome putting together of this. And a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, when I was talking to Sarah, we just started off this whole COVID-19 system, we weren't really sure whether or not it was going to take place. But Sarah actually said, no, it's going online. And lo and behold, 10th of July, 11th of July and 12th of July, the Newark Book Festival is happening online.
Yes, that is right. Very exciting to have something to look forward to.
So when you first heard about this, and it's interesting that an awful lot of the creative arts area is going online, I believe actually, indeed yesterday, if we've got the timings of this show right, the Lincolnshire show actually was online. I'm not sure whether it really was. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's nice that it was happening online, but somehow I feel the Lincolnshire show, you have to physically be there to touch the animals, but never mind, that's another line. But here you have a system where it's going on. What were your thoughts when Sarah first kind of came up with the suggestion to say, let's put it all online?
I thought, what an amazing opportunity for the festival to reach beyond Newark, and anyone in the world can tune in and experience these events and listen to their favourite authors. So, yeah, you never know. It might be the biggest year that we're going to have yet.
Which is really interesting because, I mean, clearly there have been online things of our very own Siren Radio. We've been there, we've put stuff out online and so on. But I'm looking at some of the list that you've got already lined up for this. Jess Kidd, Francis Brody, Kate Moss, of course, and a weekend of online dancing. Surely you could fall off, or is that not a tightrope? I don't know. I remember you're dealing with a 20th century person here, Lauren. Story time with Diddy Signers. Is it Diddy Signers?
I think so. Yeah, yep,
Diddy Signers.
Right.
Adventures with Pickle Witch. Debates on crime through the ages. Gothic and historical fiction. I mean, the process of this, and we'll find out a bit more from Sarah in terms of registering for the whole system, etc. Is it going to be a case of, well, make sure you've downloaded Zoom or give up completely?
All you have to do is go to the website and all the information is on there and you'll get all the instructions that you need, but exactly the same as what you would normally do with your friends and family at home on Zoom. Hmm. It's the same experience.
Okay, well, I mean, again, you are speaking to somebody born in the 20th century here, who is also, well, I'm not sure about that. But it's newarkbookfestival.org.uk, which is the go-to site from that perspective. Talk us through the way it's going to be happening and put together, because clearly this is something that I suspect later on in the year, and I believe in October, the Lincoln Book Festival might well be looking at this and saying, well, we'll do the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of events are doing this virtual experience, and it's all through video. So you just get a video link that you click on, and then you'll be with the authors from the comfort of your own home, which is very exciting. Hopefully we're going to get some nice weather as well, so people can sit around in their gardens and enjoy the festival just as what we would have done in Newark. So it's a very easy experience for people to enjoy, and the technical side of things is very easy. We're working with a brilliant company, I Am In Print, who are really helping us to get online, and will be on hand over the weekend if anyone has any issues.
And actually, you mentioned about the weather. I mean, surely the weather is more or less immaterial, unless, of course, Lord forbid, we were actually faced with floods and various other aspects of that. Because, you know, sometimes if you're outside, you know, you get the glare of the sun and so on, you actually want to be inside. And not that I'm kind of, you know, painting all book readers with the same librarian stereotype here, but, you know, sometimes you want to be inside to kind of appreciate the whole system. I mean, clearly that's part of the whole thing. Is this your first virtual festival, Lauren, or are you becoming a seasoned pro in this? Is it a case of, yeah, lead me to that computer and I'll bring you magic?
You know, I've attended quite a lot of virtual events recently because, you know, we don't have to travel to go to them. So I've had a lot of experiences of different events going on recently, and it's great. It's great because I wouldn't have normally gone to them.
And in terms of, again, the sustainability of this, I mean, one imagines that although people are saying, oh, well, you know, we'll change this around, I mean, by the time the festival comes around, of course, the 10th to the 12th of July, 2020, it may well be, and it may well be by the time you're listening to this particular programme, that the 2-metre rule has become a 1-metre rule and so on. Would you still actually say, no, enjoy it at home, do not physically turn up at Newark? Or would you, what are the kind of views of that? Is there a backup that's in place for that?
There are plans in place, there are different options. So we really want to get back to meeting up in person. I think, you know, that festival atmosphere that we have in Newark is absolutely brilliant. And as soon as we can, I think we will be. For now, it's all virtual, and it's so lovely to have something to look forward to and to still kind of get together. And we're all going to be talking online on social media throughout the festival to have those conversations and share those experiences that we would in person.
I mean, again, I'm excited by it. I think it's going to be wonderful. I am also conscious that sometimes for the digitally disadvantaged, it can be a little bit problematic. Yes, it's fine if you've got total all-spinning, all-dancing fibre optic broadband, but there are those of us who don't even have fibre optic stuff at this particular stage. So it's an interesting line. However, let's talk to people who are listening to this who are very excited. They might never have heard about this. Best way to find out about it, of course, is to go to the Newark Book Festival website. You can also... is it still possible to become a volunteer or a festival friend?
Yeah, absolutely. You can become a festival friend. And this year, most of the tickets are £2.50 each. Mm. But if you become a festival friend, just for £15 a year, then you get access for free to all the events. So that's a way to go to all of them, which I will be.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good from that line. And, of course, that website, again, is newarkbookfestival.org.uk. What are you most looking forward to, Lauren? Or is it a case of it's such a new territory, I'm really just hoping it all goes well and we don't have a massive power cut?
No, fingers crossed, all technology will work well. I'm personally really looking forward to the writing for wellbeing workshop with Leanne Modin, just because I think that's going to be a fantastic creative activity for everybody right now. And I know that personally, I really enjoy being creative at the moment and having an outlet. So I think that one's going to be really interesting.
Well, in our own way, as one of the friends of the festival from its early days, even before Sarah Blumow actually came on board and looked after the whole thing, and your good self, Siren, I'm sure, and the Midweek Drive is more than happy to support the festival. And I think it may well be possible we might be having a few pre-festival author interviews. I think we were talking about that, which could be quite exciting, just to sort of tease ahead to the kind of things that people might sort of be interested in. Of course, when the whole thing goes live in July, again, 10th to the 12th of July 2020. Exciting times. Lauren, it's been awesome having you back on the programme. We're going to speak again to the festival coordinator and indeed the artistic director. Let's give her a full title, Sarah Bullimore, in a few moments. What's your official title, Lauren, within the festival? Is it just a case of the awesome Lauren Wood?
I don't really have an official title. I'm a volunteer, so I just volunteer for the joy of it. I help with the marketing and things like that, so you can call me a marketing volunteer if you need it.
I think more than that, essential marketing volunteer. You know, you've got a the best ever marketing volunteer. The marketing volunteer for whom other marketing volunteers would effectively just say, if Lauren's on the case, we've got a winner. That's all we would say. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic return to the Midweek Drive, Lauren?
I have. It's been lovely. It's been too long. Thank you for having me.
Well, exactly. And will you be back again in the very near future?
I would love to.
Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman, affecting an accent.
I got a license to kill, and you know I- Yes, you do.
You sigh. Ooh, baby. Now you can depend on me to keep things right.
That's no time to die, even if you do have a license to kill. Who would have thought that we would have featured not one, but two fabulous graduates from the University of Lincoln's public relations course? We've just heard, of course, from Lauren Wood, now one of the key folk behind the Newark Book Festival. And now, yes, we promised you he'd be back a week or so ago, and we keep our promises. So does Ben Lewis. Welcome, Ben. How are you?
Morning, Alex. Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, good. But a little bit time confused, because I've been figuring out last week, of course, after we identified that you were more Sam Matterface than Des Lynam, because we couldn't quite find out what Des Lynam was about in terms of your correspondence with us. I also had the thought, thinking, well, yeah, you could give predictions, but you know, by the time the siren listener, if they're tuned in on a Thursday morning, actually hear those predictions, they're no longer predictions because they've already happened. The match has taken place.
Yeah, they would be. And I guess my predictions would be worse than Mark Lawrence's anyway. So I don't think it's any point me doing this.
I've had some thought about this, so I thought what we need to do is we need to look ahead even further, which means that you might have to make the predictions without necessarily knowing the results of the in-between games.
Right.
So clearly I was very tempted to actually give you the Norwegian Eliteserien of Rosenborg versus Bodø or Glimt, because I know secretly you've always been a passionate follower of the Norwegian football.
As you know, I can't sleep at night without thinking about Norwegian football.
It's presumably what is keeping the citizens of Brighton awake at night. Then, of course, there was the Spanish La Liga, Elba versus Valencia. But then I thought, no, we'll keep it Premier League at present. So we'll come to these in a few moments after we've had some thoughts about goal line technology, VAR functioning perfectly, and maybe the wonderful world of David Luiz. After we actually say we will be asking you for your predictions for Burnley, Watford, Southampton, Arsenal, and Chelsea, Manchester City.
Okay.
Which actually takes place, all being well, on the evening of Thursday, the 25th of June. So there we are. That way, you see, the predictions are still good when the Midweek Drive Morning Edition actually launches. That's okay.
Yeah.
And then we can come back and actually talk about the whole thing. So the season has started behind closed doors, as we knew it would. Have you been following the thing so far? Were you disappointed with Jose Mourinho failing to actually secure 3 points against Manchester United? Is it a case of, well, Norwich have certainly gone down the tubes? Or are you more concerned with Cheltenham actually having a two-goal lead in the playoff finals?
That's true. I watched all of them. I saw the highlights of the Cheltenham. I think it was Cheltenham versus Northampton the other day.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, very interesting. To go to Sheffield United midweek on Wednesday, that was some howler from the Hawk guy.
You know, it's almost as though if you were a Sheffield United fan, given the way that they were relegated over the fiasco a few years ago with two players, one of whom, Mascherano, went on to Liverpool, and the other one, of course, Carlos Tevez, went on to play for both Manchester clubs, you'd almost think if you were a Blades follower, maybe the gods had it in for you.
Some bad luck, isn't it? I mean, it could potentially stop them going into the European Championships. Mm. And, you know, I do feel a bit sorry for them. And also, from Aston Villa's perspective, as a Brighton fan, it's not very useful because that's an extra point for them.
And they
need to keep it as small as possible, really, for Brighton to survive.
And then
looking later into the week, obviously, your team beat Arsenal quite.
I think it was reasonably okay, although thanks to David Luiz for at least providing two of the goals, which was nice. A lovely little flick on for the first one, and then, of course, pulling down Riyad Mahrez for the penalty for the second, which obviously led to his sending off.
I think my judgment from that was they might as well not bother bringing him on, because in fact they would have done better if they'd not brought him on. They would have been in 1-0 loss.
Yeah, but then really? maybe he wanted more lockdown. I mean, maybe this is the thing we've forgotten about with that goal for Sheffield. Goal for Sheffield United, that effectively the additional Premiership ruling, in addition to all the things that they've got with respect to social distancing, is the ball actually had to be 2 metres over the line. You know, just a thought.
It's one of those things, and I wonder how, if it will mess up again. But I mean, you know, I think one in 9,000 isn't too bad, but it shouldn't really be that sort of that average at all. I think it needs to be, you know, 100% perfect. But it'd be interesting to see how Brighton got on today against Arsenal. And I watched the game last night as well, the Man United Tottenham game, as you just mentioned. And it was very interesting. And thankfully, the VAR played played well and did very well to prevent that penalty taking place, because God knows how that would have been given in a normal game. But it was interesting. And I think 1-1 was a fair result, but I think Tottenham probably should have won, realistically speaking. I think Man United played really poorly, and you know the goal they did give away was pretty poor in itself.
Is there an irony that Edward De Gea is in goal for United when they've got a superb goal, a superb keeper, I should say, on loan at Sheffield United, who many people are saying should be in the England squad?
I don't think so. I mean, the guys played very well. He did make a couple of good saves yesterday, but I think, you know, it's tough when you make one mistake in the Premier League. You're then berated as being a horrendous goalkeeper. But I think the trouble is with goalkeepers. I had it when I was a goalkeeper, that people always remember your mistakes more than the good saves that you make. So it's, as David Luiz will experience, no doubt, this week from his mistakes.
The one good thing, as far as David is concerned, is that at least he doesn't have to deal with any crowd noise for the foreseeable future.
That's true. God forbid to know what would have gone on in that situation, really.
I think there would have been one or two people who would have been a little bit upset, perhaps, or indeed a little bit happy, depending on your particular perspective. As a goalkeeper, though, Ben, one of the peculiar things, which I've never quite managed to suss out what has happened in this, one of the great mysteries of the 21st century. What has happened with Joe Hart?
Joe Hart, I think his career's just sort of nosedived a little bit. I mean, obviously,
a little bit. It's fallen off a platform.
he's at Burnley now, isn't he? He's not West Ham anymore.
No.
And the trouble is with Burnley, they've got three great goalkeepers anyway. So they've got obviously Tom Heaton and Nick Pope as well there, who are both, you know, younger. Both good England contenders, and I don't think Joe Hart really stands a chance there. I mean, I think he only did well at Man City because, I mean, the only other person to do in a goalkeeper there was Willy Caballero, and and Bravo as well, and not being funny.
Yes, Bravo actually took Joe Hart's place, which at the time I was a bit concerned about, and I think Pep Guardiola shared my concerns after that season. But to be fair to Bravo, he has actually managed to be in goal for some triumphs in the Carabao Cup, which may or may not take place next season.
Not too bad then.
I think Hart's career
is just a bit of a shame, really, at the back end anyway. I think the front end, he's done very well and gone very
Do you want to know my theory, Ben?
Go on.
My theory is it all started going pear-shaped when he started doing those dandruff commercials. That was when it all started. That was the key thing.
Theory.
There was a moment where, before then, absolutely flawless, virtually immaculate, started doing those dandruff commercials for that well-known shampoo. All went down the tubes.
I agree.
Anyway, let's ask for those predictions. Burnley versus Watford.
Burnley win probably 2-3-0. Burnley Watford.
I'm going to go, because we might as well make this competitive, and let's go for some sort of competition in terms of this sequence. I'm going to go Burnley 1, Watford 1.
Okay.
I think Nigel Pearson is doing some good stuff there. Southampton thrash Norwich, of course, 3-0 away. Or is there such a thing as an away fixture these days? I don't know. Versus Arsenal, also at the hind end of a 3-0 result, as we've just said, against City.
I think Southampton 1-0.
I'm going to go, because it is a home game, even though it may not make any difference whatsoever, I'm going to go Southampton 0, Arsenal 1. I'm going to reverse that for you. And Chelsea, Manchester City.
I suspect you're not going to be too kind to Chelsea in this one, but I think with the new signing Chelsea just made, Man City are on form. It is at Stamford Bridge, so I think 1-1.
I was very tempted to go 1-1, but I'm going to agree. I'm going to go 1-1 as well. I'm tempted
That's
to say City to win 2-1, but I'm thinking maybe we need to be thinking about other scenarios. Lots going to depend on how Everton, and we're obviously cheering them on actually over the weekend. We'll know by the time this actually goes out how they've come on against that other side that will always have an asterisk against their name, or maybe not. Ben, it has been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. We will hopefully do it again next week, if that's okay.
It's great to speak to you again. Yeah, of course, no problem at all.
Excellent, and we'll have those results. I still think that you should actually have a look at the Norwegian First Division, because you've also got Sarpsborg 08 versus Strømsgodset. And I do believe Strømsgodset were one of the teams who was quite interested in actually taking you when you were actually in the goalkeeping scenario.
They really weren't.
It was in the
gossip. I don't think any of them would be. I wouldn't stand any chance in Norway.
You never know. You never know.
Oh, baby.
City Blues, Make Me Wanna Holler, Marvin Gaye, the late Marvin Gaye, and featured on the soundtrack from one of the movies that Richard Fitzwilliams will be speaking about in a matter of moments after he gives rightful tribute to two fine souls who've moved on, transcended, and have our best wishes as they move into another experience of their cosmic adventure. First of all, Richard Fitzwilliams, welcome back to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
I am absolutely fine.
Excellent. Dame Vera Lynn, and, of course, Ian Holm. One was 103, one was in his 80s, but they've headed off.
Indeed, and Dame Vera, I mean, a legend in her own lifetime. And one of the remarkable things, I think, about Vera Lynn was the fact that when the Queen addressed the nation about the pandemic and ended with mention, everyone knew, of course, her link with the war, the fact the Queen is the last remaining head of state who saw service in it. But when she mentioned we'll meet again, she knew that it would resonate emotionally with her audience. And the extraordinary thing is, with so few remembering wartime, that Vera Lynn's profile, her successes in the 1990s, in her 90s, topping the charts. I mean, this the fact that she had a lifetime at the top, that she was so well known, that she was regarded as the force's sweetheart, that in fact she travelled in the war to Egypt and India and Burma, and was actually in Burma during the Battle of Kohima. There is absolutely no question that the nation held her very, very close to its heart, and I think she tapped so well in those songs, which some might find too sentimental, but nonetheless there was nostalgia for Berkeley Square or the White Cliffs, and they were looking to the future, so important, A Lovely Day Tomorrow and We'll Meet Again and so forth, and it's this that I think was so significant, because she was not glamorous in the way the word is usually used, but she was tremendously appealing, and the fact that she had that allure where, you know, the ordinary squaddy felt that such a person could be waiting for him when he came home.
The Force's sweetheart. And the strange thing, though, as far as I'm aware, she was never actually used on any of the Spike Lee movie soundtracks. We'll come on to that in a few moments. Let's progress to a gentleman who, for me, his most emotive line was certainly the one in The Lord of the Rings, where, as Bilbo Baggins, he laments the passing of time and argues that in so many ways to Gandalf, he feels like butter spread too thinly over a piece of toast.
And for me, I think the most memorable was in Chariots of Fire, Sam Musimbeni, the coach of Harold Abrahams, who says it's the coach that does the asking. And, of course, he and Abrahams have this famous collaboration, and that was one where he was highly praised, as incidentally, and this must also get a mention, is the doctor in The Madness of King George, the film, who actually manages to assist the king's recovery. But of course, one must remember his years on the stage, culminating initially in a terrifying bout of stage fright in 1976, and subsequently a triumphal return, including a much-praised Lear.
Born 12th of September 1931, obviously 90 years of age when he suddenly passed away.
Well, and certainly Alien, Young Winston, Oh, What a Lovely War, you know, so much to remember.
88. Just people wondering, can he not do mathematics on this particular stage? We started off with Marvin Gaye and his wonderful line that was featured on the Spike Lee movie Inner City Blues. It's not the classic movie this week, but it is available on Netflix, Da Five Bloods.
Yes, indeed. And the point to make here, I think, firstly, is that this is a major film, and also, I think, the first one that I would say was a really significant film to be streamed, because so far they haven't streamed that many. Firstly, numerically, and secondly, they have tended to be fairly low budget. Whereas this is especially timed during the Black Lives Matter protest, and it contains supportive footage of it. I mean, Spike Lee is angry, and you can see it here. And this is an ambitious film, and also visually filmed in Vietnam. It is highly impressive. It's also over long, I would say, and too polemical, because the film itself makes points that the documentary footage elaborates on, but you could argue as to whether or not that was actually necessary. It features four black infantry veterans. Paul, a particularly good performance by Delroy Lindo. Otis, played by Clark Peters, and Eddie, Norm, played by Norm Lewis, as well as Melvin, Asaya Whitlock Jr. Now, they return to contemporary Vietnam, so they're aging, to recover gold that they had stolen during the war. They buried it, and they want to return and steal it and get it out. No easy feat, as we see. They also want to find the body of Stormy Norm Holloway, played by Chadwick Boseman, who you remember from Black Panther, the leader of their squad, and they're joined by David, played by Jonathan Majors, Paul's son, who knows how haunted his father has been since the conflict. And there are numerous a lot of this film is told in flashbacks. There's some extremely good action scenes. And also, one has to mention, it's a complex plot. The Vietnamese authorities are on the lookout. They have a guide. They find the gold. And what happens when they attempt to remove it? And what about their links with a dubious French smuggler, Des Roches, played by Jean Leno, whom they meet through Tien, played by Le Wa Ye Lan, who had a child after a wartime affair with Otis. And also they encounter a group who are clearing the area of landmines, including Heavy Bouvier, played by Melanie Thierry, most attractive French actress. Now, Vietnam, of course, was an American nightmare, and there's no question that it disproportionately affected the black community and scarred the country's soul. The audacity of this film, Spike Lee's inventive direction, commands our attention. For example, he'll play Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries. Everyone knows that that links to the helicopter attack in Apocalypse Now. And also some of the visuals remind us of that. And the veterans even travel upriver, which, of course, they did in to terminate Colonel Kurtz with extreme prejudice in Apocalypse Now. Delroy Lindo, absolutely outstanding. Clark Peters, beautifully underplaying the role of Otis, as he, too, comes to terms with his past. And it's a universally excellent cast. And much of it is set in the jungle. And it's extraordinary what a surreal fascination the Vietnamese jungle exerts. I mean, I have to say that the film makes its points about exploitation, points also about the current Black Lives Matter issues, and also about the horror of the Vietnam War. And it also sustains tension very well in the plot. I wouldn't have thought it was actually necessary to add the scale of the documentary footage of moments linked to appearances by Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King, and others.
Richard, it was almost as though it was taking my entire script for two of my sessions on the Vietnam War for the Histories of Journalism course at the University of Lincoln that I put together.
The thing is, Spike Lee has got 2 hours and 20 minutes to tell a story, and also he's telling the story of how African Americans have been exploited, using the Vietnam War as an obvious catalyst. So this is a movie with a lot in it. I did find it a bit overlong, I have to say, and as I say also, the movie makes the point within the story. It wasn't, in my opinion, necessary to use so much footage, some of which we've previously seen, but it's got good dialogue. There's one scene, for example, just to mention, where one of the Vietnamese soldiers says to one of the vets, he mentions Cali. It's assumed that he means California. He doesn't. He means Cali of the My Lai massacre, not a riot. Spike Lee brings in some of the Well, I mean, it is a powerful protest movie, but it is extremely well made, and my goodness, it is ambitious, because movies that return to Vietnam, and we remember The Deer Hunter, of course, and obviously there's, as I mentioned, so much of Apocalypse Now. There's also a touch of Richard Linklater's Last Flag Flying in this film, too, climactically, but no spoilers from me, because there's a lot of tension in whether or not they get that gold out, how they do, if they do, and what happens.
A little too liberal use of the F word, but I can understand why it was littered throughout the whole process, and I did feel that actually, in terms of the technological side of the movie, it was nice. It was a nice artifact to effectively reduce the framing of the shot when they went back into time and then go to full expansiveness when they were in the present day. I thought that was quite nice, so that worked well. And remember, Richard, you can always on Netflix pause it and come back at another time.
I would very, very strongly oppose doing
it. I thought you might. I thought you might say.
I think that is the reason I think it's a dreadful idea, and listeners, I hope, will agree with me. You might have to.
Yes.
You probably would have to,
yes,
given the fact it's a very long movie. But my goodness me, you shouldn't want to. The point is that the film experience, you're in the jungles of Vietnam. You're not in some...
You're not in Paris or New York, actually working for a fashion company and actually dealing with The Devil Wears Prada. Sweet
is
in the background.
That's true, but my goodness me, The Devil Wears Prada was... It was wonderfully successful because it is such a seductive homage to fashion culture. And, of course, Meryl Streep's masterly portrayal of Miranda Priestley, based allegedly anyway, and it is almost certain that it was, on Anna Wintour, the editor-in-chief of Vogue since 1988, legendary, powerful, and reportedly ruthless. Streep plays her in this rather wonderfully nuanced way, so whereas there is something of the monster and the intriguer, there's also something of somebody who really contributed to her field, and there's a wonderful scene where, I mean, this is a fairy story, of course, Anne Hathaway playing Andrea, who gets a job as Miranda Priestley's assistant on Runway, a fashion Bible. Well, I mean, she turns up in clothes that wouldn't have got her a job anywhere at all, but what does count is the way Miranda tells her how fashion has influenced even what she is wearing, and though it will show parts of the fashion industry of all the intrigue and the superficiality, it also has a real heart, and it has a wonderful take on a fashionista, Emily Blunt's highly praised portrayal as the senior assistant, Emily Charlton, who lives for fashion. It's absolutely deliciously cynical. And Stanley Tucci as the art director of Runway, who has a heart, and indeed there were those who said that the romance, Andrea's romance with Nate, played by Andre Grenier, suffers because, of course, she is at the beck and call of Miranda, who keeps giving her jobs that are nearly totally impossible. To get the manuscript of the new Harry Potter for Miranda's twins before it's been published, how could she manage such a thing? And but the colour, the seductive aspect of this, the fact that it includes Paris, and the cameras glide, so to speak, along, whether it's fashion shoots, some outrageous ones, or whether, I mean, it satirizes, it seduces. The glamour, firstly, in the Big Apple, where most of it is set, and secondly, culminating in the Paris Fashion Week, then the catwalk shows and so on. So you've got the colours, you've got the clothes, you've got the excitement, you've got the buzz of it all. Of course there's a superficiality of it, but then there are the galas, you see, that attract. And so it's a fascinatingly ambiguous movie when it comes to Miranda Priestley and her actual character. And you also see a bit behind the mask. She's going through a divorce and she's under pressure, and also there's a takeover in the air, what happens there. And Anne Hathaway is marvellous as Andrea, I thought. Emily Blunt, absolutely captivating as a character who
as Emily. She plays indeed Emily, I believe.
She does, and yes, she
which
does.
Is very easy. I do recall that at the time Emily Blunt actually had to battle to actually have the character English, because originally Emily was supposed to be American.
Well, one of the things that this shows, I mean, it's the universality of fashion and the fashion industry. The fact it can be absolutely ruthless, and also the fact that it's synonymous with beauty. I mean, Andrea initially doesn't bother about it, and she's told by Stanley Tucci's character that millions of girls would kill for the job she has.
I must admit there were parts of me which, and maybe I'm looking at it from the perspective of 2020, of a 2006 movie, so 14 years have passed, but I did feel that actually you're dealing with an awful lot of legal writs if the workplace was used to such intimidating tactics today. For instance, the steak. What had the steak ever done to actually deserve being junked in the way that it was? You know, she gets the Harry Potter novel, she gets the steak, and the steak is just thrown away.
But how would that affect anyone in the workplace? After all, she could do what she wished with the food that she...
Not when there are people starving in the world, Richard, honestly.
But then, you see, the world is made a better place by the colour, by the fascination, by the seductive power, however unjust and superficial, of cultural...
Interesting enough, nine years later, because I was having a bit of an Anne Hathaway moment this week, I decided to watch in full, without any pauses whatsoever, Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro in The Intern, which is a similar kind of role, in which case Anne Hathaway is actually the boss of the internet company, and as you might have expected, Robert De Niro plays the intern. I thought it was an interesting take. A lot of similarities in some ways between The Devil Wears Prada and The Intern.
And interesting that The Intern, which had De Niro, I thought, in a very touching role, because he's ageing, she is the boss, as you say, and, well, he wants a chance at another job late in life, and there it is.
Yeah.
The Intern had not only a cast that could respond to a good script, but it had a real heart to it, and I really liked it. I liked it enormously.
Yeah. I would put it ahead of Devil's Wears Prada. Devil Wears Prada would score an 8 for me. Da 5 Bloods, 7.5, 7 to 7.5.
Yeah, no, I would go along with that. Devil Wears Prada, I'd give 10, because remember, I am seduced
of course,
by fashion.
Yeah, absolutely.
I review the London Fashion Week scene.
Precisely. And The Intern, not that we're doing that, but The Intern would probably have got an 8.5 to 9 for me.
Oh, yes, it would, because The Intern was actually a very special film, and I'm delighted you mentioned it, because it's one that I enjoyed enormously. It was 5 years ago?
2015, I believe, nearly 5 years ago.
Yes, I mean, because De Niro's had ups and downs. Mm. We'll be charitable and avoid mentioning one or two.
Well, as you know, Richard, I was very keen on you to actually get involved with Dame Judi Dench's latest awesome entry into how can she actually better the fabulous role she had in Cats the Musical, and she has done it as the head of the Leprechaun Police in the wonderful... Disney.
Artemis Fowl, yes.
Exactly,
yes.
Artemis Fowl. So despite Rotten Tomatoes, I would say, have a look at that, Richard. I'm sure you'll find it extraordinary. Meanwhile, are we talking La La Land as the classic movie next week?
We certainly, and I think it would be a wonderful opportunity to discuss that very movie. Absolutely, yes. I find it very interesting, because I'm fully familiar when I'm discussing La La Land, which I absolutely loved and have seen several times, and including recently, that a lot of people disagreed. And it's fascinating if one deals with certain films. I'm thinking, for example, Dunkirk was a recent one as well. And you exist in a bubble, and you read other critics and so forth, and you read a series of rave reviews, and you believe La La Land anyway, because Hollywood loves movies set in its own backyard, is going to sweep the Oscars because of you think it's absolutely superb. In point of fact, the majority, and there were views both ways, but the majority certainly were not enthusiastic, and some actually disliked it. So it's extraordinary. It would be very interesting to revisit that. And there's another... Of the newly streamed movies,
Artemis Fowl? Perhaps not.
No. I don't. It's because they say it's such a lot of rubbish.
I've watched it twice. It gets slightly better on second viewing, but there are moments when you think, really?
Watched it? Why?
Just to see whether it was as bad as I thought it was first time around.
Have you got all the time to spend watching rubbish?
It's the easing of lockdown. It's getting me back into the swing of things, Richard.
I understand. Oh. And I, as someone whose admiration of cats was such, as you know, you remember.
Yeah, well, this is probably a whole new level. You were going to make a suggestion for the streaming movie. Which one are you going to go for?
I will email you the suggestion.
That's okay.
Once I have given thought to it. But I think La La Land's an excellent one because I don't know, you're taking it. Let's save that till next
week.
We
will. Meanwhile, Richard, I'm going to award you music producer's hat status now because you need to choose which of the next two pieces of music, both of which are featured in The Devil Wears Prada, we're going to go for. First of all, from the backdrop to when Miranda and Andy effectively head off to Paris, it's U2 and City of Blinding Lights, or, fairly self-evidently, Madonna and Vogue. Which one are you going to go for?
I'll go for Madonna.
Really? I thought you would have gone for the Parisian aspect, but no, you've struck that pose. Richard, it's been awesome. Speak again next week.
Absolutely.
What are you looking at?